It is time for a Walk and Talk podcast, and we're going to do that in podcast 860, Hurricane Hysteria, Creating the American Dream World. We're going to talk about that in this podcast. Well, as you may or may not know, I've been advertising various legal services in order to help subscribers and individuals, people in small businesses. And now I want to tell you about Virtus Law. So Virtus Law has offices in Cambridge, Minnesota, Edina, Maplewood, Red Wing, Mendota Heights, and even in Dallas, Texas. When it comes to business law, Virtus Law, of course, offers full services. But if you're a small business owner, let me ask you a question. Are you thinking strategically? Maybe you think one step ahead when you have time to do that, and that's good. Maybe your lawyer even thinks two or perhaps three steps ahead, and that's good too. But the truth is that in order to be on top of things today in business, that might not be enough. For example, when it comes to management service agreements, of course, succession for family-owned businesses, estate planning, partnerships, of course, asset protection, debt issues, and income tax planning, what you need today is a strategic planner, and that is what Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law is all about. He is the guy, he's the lawyer that you want. Let's be honest, most lawyers don't really give you strategic advice. Yes, they will do whatever you need them to do, but if you're the owner of a growing business or you have a little more on the ball, then you might be frustrated with not getting strategic advice, whereas you have to be the strategic thinker, but maybe you don't have the legal training to really be effective in that area. So you want that from whoever your lawyer is. You want to look at long-term planning and not short-term transactions, and that is what Nathan W. Nelson, one of the co-founders at Virtus Law, does. I know Nathan. I've spent a lot of time talking to Nathan, and he thinks strategically, and it's so important. So remember, Virtus Law, full legal services, strategic planners with fees structured reasonably. Call Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law, 612-888-1000. That's 612-888-1000. Virtus Law serves small businesses and their owners. Visit Virtus Law online. They have a great client interface where you can explain your needs and get a good idea of the legal services Virtus Law provides on their landing page, or click on the Virtus Law banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Virtus Law. Yeah, I wanted to get into at least one walk and talk here before we got too far into September. It's about midnight, which means that the last few planes are landing at the airport, flying over. It's a little misty and actually too cold to be out here with no shoes on, but it is still, you can really hear the bugs because it's kind of cool tonight, so they're all trying to stay warm as they experience the last few days of their life. Because in my neck of the woods in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, it won't be warm very much longer, but it is great out here. It's a little windy, and as you know, I have a penchant for, you know, one of the things that my pet peeve is wind in the microphones. So I'm really kind of concerned about wind in the microphones out here. I can hear a little bit because there's kind of a breeze, so we're going to try to avoid that as much as possible. But it's a good venue to talk about what is going on in the world in the last few weeks and days. And that is this, it's a story that, as I have often said, that from the podcast perspective, commenting on things going on doesn't make much sense until we have an outcome. And we have an outcome as it pertains to Hurricane Dorian. And I find it fascinating because this is just something that over the last week or so that has happened that literally occupied almost 24 hours a day of television coverage. Over and over and over again, day after day after day, hour after hour of television coverage, up to and including the president's own predictions about where the hurricane would go and the kind of damage it would do. And of course, it was going to track right across the Mid-South and the Central South United States and wreak havoc in Republican Southern America all the way over to Alabama. But that was wishful thinking. And what I find fascinating is that everybody in the media is attacking the president for his projections of where the storm was going to go based on NOAA predictions and projections of where the storm could go, except for his little added Sharpie circular you know, storm prediction. It was fascinating how he's being pilloried by the media for his own false predictions about where the storm was going to go. And for weeks, I mean weeks, before the storm even was fully formed, we were told this was the worst storm ever, that it was going to destroy the Bahamas and the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico and Florida, and it was going to wreak havoc all the way up the East Coast of America. Now, it did do some damage. It did some damage in, I believe, South Carolina. But for the most part, we were spared the ravages that occurred in the Bahamas. And again, this isn't to make light of what happened to the people in the Bahamas, but I think it is interesting that for more than a week, there were all sorts of dire predictions about what was going to happen and what was going to happen when the hurricane hit first South Florida. And this comes with, and I have to point this out because I think it's really, really important. You know, it comes with an entire list of warnings and hurricane evacuation plans being enacted and emergencies being declared, money being dispensed, people in the, you know, special bunkers that are built for big cities and state governments all over the country where they get to use the video monitors and the special radios and go underground and pretend that it's the equivalent of war. This is the modern emergency equivalent of a nuclear war. They've turned hurricanes into this incredible thing that people have to stay home and watch television and figure out where the hurricane's going to go. And, you know, I have friends all over the country. So I have friends in Florida and friends in South Carolina and friends in North Carolina and, you know, friends all through the Mid-South. And I'm sure most people do. So you call your friends up and you say, gee, I hope things are going good. Or you go on Facebook and you say, hey, I hope you guys in Stuart, Florida are okay, you know, with the hurricane. And then either they write back, this is a joke, or they write back, we're really worried and we went out and bought extra water. And there was the story on network news about Costco selling hundreds of, you know, generators at top dollar, being, you know, it's a whole big industry, this fear mongering as it pertains to hurricanes. So let me just say, you know, people in Minnesota have something called snowstorms. Now, snowstorms are a little different from hurricanes in that, although in some ways they're actually very similar. Snowstorms, it's hard to tell where they're going to hit. And, okay, now I gotta turn around. Okay, you see, feel that. I feel like I'm standing next to the blowing of a Category 5 storm. Listen to the wind in the microphones. Oh my God, I don't think I can stand out here much longer. Anyway, we have snowstorms in the north, and snowstorms are kind of like hurricanes because it's kind of hard to tell where they're going to go and where the most snow is going to fall. And right before the first storm, every single time, people run out to empty the stores of, you know, all the supplies that they think they're going to need during this mega snowstorm. And every single time, forecasters and newscasters and cable news makes a giant deal out of the snowstorm. Most of the time, Minnesota doesn't get too much publicity because not enough people live here. Now, I think this is instructive, and I'm going to get to the point here after I sort of set the table. We usually don't get too much publicity about, you know, the impending doom that snowstorms will bring. Power failures and death and destruction, and people are going to freeze to death and get off the streets and, you know, all these things. Because there aren't that many people living in Minnesota, and it wouldn't serve the media any at all to broadcast about the people in Minnesota, you know, succumbing to the storm of the century, quote unquote. And So they wait until it gets to Chicago, and then they talk about the storm of the century hitting Chicago. And usually they don't even bother with Chicago unless because people think, oh, Chicago, they always get that kind of weather, you know. Until they get to the East Coast, and when the storms begin to hit the East Coast in the winter, it is the storm of the century. And every winter we have snowstorms, and every winter we have cold spells, and every winter we have, you know, variable types of weather systems, and given the cold, and given the, you know, polar vortexes and everything else, guess what? It's just like the hurricanes that come every year in the Atlantic with the change of seasons. And every year, every hurricane season is predicted to be the worst ever. Every single hurricane is the biggest that was ever, you know, that ever happened, ever, and is going to kill millions of people. And you'd better get out and run now, because you'll not be able to get out once it started. My son went to Orlando the weekend that storm was going to hit Florida. And I remember telling him, you shouldn't be going there, blah, 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 blah. And he called me and said, hey, you know, the weather, people are at the, I'm at the airport in Orlando, and it's weird because people are trying to leave. And it sounded very ominous, the breeze that was coming from this huge storm that was going to hit, you know, Florida. And first it was going to hit Miami, and then they were going to go to the Keys. That was the plan. So then they decided to go to South Carolina instead of the Keys. And then they came back, and at no point were they in any danger from the hurricane. Meanwhile, everywhere they went, people were trying to evacuate and really pissed. The people in Charleston, where they went for just a weekend, were all like, yeah, we're not leaving, because something to the effect of, they did this last time and there was no point in it. So we ended up having to leave and board up our houses, and nothing happened. We just got a lot of rain. Again, not to diminish the danger of a true Category 5 hurricane hitting Florida or hitting South Carolina, not even to make fun of the NOAA or all the weather forecasters who work for the government trying to put out these tracks and potential tracks for the hurricane. It's not about them. Not even to fault the president, although what he did was just a craven attempt to get people interested in him in those target states, as though he was, you know, I'm on this because I'm your guy, you know, that kind of a thing. So to me, there was no point in the president even speaking at that point to tell anyone what was going to happen. But, you know, he can do what he wants, so I'm not going to criticize him for that. Moreover, I think it's silly to criticize him for doing what everyone else is doing on CNN and Fox and all the TV stations and all the television networks 24 hours a day. I actually saw a YouTube video from, I think his name is Florida Marquis or Florida Mackie, who said, this is one of these doom guys. Everything is going to, you know, this is what, where you need to go when the you know what hits the fan. And, you know, this whole thing about, you know, I'm going to tell you what you need to do when this whole thing happens. And he was posting videos all through the thing. And here we are in Port St. Lucie, and, you know, what's here is a big nuclear plant. And if that hurricane hits this nuclear plant, well, I don't know what's going to happen. Well, it didn't. So, you know, now what? So I guess he's going to scuttle away into the shadows and wait a few days before he comes up with some new crazy potential doom. So why is this podcast entitled Hysteria, Hurricanes Hysteria, America's Dream World, and Creating America's Dream World? I'll talk about that in the second half of this Walk and Talk podcast. Well, let's talk payment processors, as long as we're talking about business law and other stuff going on in this podcast. So there is a revolution in this country called the payment processing revolution, and ReliaFund, my payment processor, has been at the forefront of the payment processing revolution in this country from the very beginning. And why? Because what they do is integrate their systems with your systems. And if you have a fairly good, small-sized business, guess what? what? You have lots of back office systems, and you have, if you're going to do payment processing of any kind, your stuff needs to be integrated. That's what ReliaFund does. So here's how it works. They don't have any long-term contracts. They're secure and technology-focused. They've been doing this for 20 years at ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, technology-focused, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. If you call them, you will talk to a human being. Ask for Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That's R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com. Well, you know, another example of the crazy predictions that media makes that may come true and may not come true is the news about trade that continues to dribble out of the White House and get rebroadcast all over the world in various shapes or form. And so businesses aren't really sure what they're going to do about foreign manufacturing. And some companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the United States. To do that, you have to have a great company here in the United States. Let me recommend DepoStar, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depostar.com, or click on the DepoStar banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. In the midst of this whole thing, you know, I was on the radio and I used hurricane coverage as an example of how the media, and it's all media, it's not just, used to be called the mainstream media. We would refer to the mainstream media as doing this because no one else would ever do this. Unfortunately, it is now all media. And so, in keeping with my own personal and with the Bob Davis podcast's overarching mission, I refuse to talk about the hurricane. And the reason I refused to talk about the hurricane was, in my mission of waiting for outcomes, there was virtually no reason to discuss it because, you know, it would end up with me making predictions and saying, this is where it's going to hit and what happens if it hits, and this is part of the problem. But I think coverage of this type of thing really shows the depths to which the media, the creators of the American dream world, will stoop to try to get people to watch their channels. And they do this with everything. And that's why this hurricane thing is so important, because they literally engaged in hurricane hysteria, complete with people standing on beaches, with the wind blowing and predictions of where it was going to hit, people buying generators, scaring the hell out of people. Over something that happens three or four times a year, every single year, in South Florida and along the southeastern coast of the United States. Just as much as earthquakes in California or snowstorms in the upper Midwest, during the winter, or, you know, polar vortexes and cold air coming down from the Arctic in January and February in my neck of the woods. And every year, power fails, and people have to go to hotels because their furnaces fail, or they spin out on the freeway and they get killed, or, you know, every year during snowstorms, this kind of thing happens. And so they call them deadly. They're deadly. And yes, people are killed during these kinds of calamities, but for the most part, most of us who live here deal with it. And we know that they're coming, just as much as we know that there are tornadoes. When you live in the outer reaches of the suburbs, the exurbs in Minneapolis and St. Paul, just as we did when I was growing up in Chicago, I saw them when I was a kid, and they do look like the Wizard of Oz, the tornadoes on, and the bad weather coming and nothing to stop it. And so you headed for the basement. If you had a basement, a lot of the houses that were built in the 40s and 50s and early 60s did not have basements. We didn't have a basement in the house that I lived in at one point. And we had, it was a split level with a raised foundation. And the only place you could go was basically around the foundation. But the house we lived in before that did not have a basement. You know, it was a plot of concrete and a house built on top of it, just like all the other houses after World War II. And, you know, I remember being put under the dining room table or being pushed into the bathroom, because that's the most secure spot in a building like that, because tornadoes came all the time, all summer long. And they do here too. You live in Elk River, Minnesota, or, Otsego, or to the west, past Lake Minnetonka, you know, if you live in Hutchinson, someplace like that, or way to the south of Burnsville, you know very well about tornadoes. If you live in the city, it's not so bad, but if you live in any suburban area and you have a house that does not have a deep basement, you're real familiar with tornadoes. But that doesn't stop them from turning it into the end of the world. Now, the reason I bring this up is not just so I can do a podcast about hurricanes now that they're over with. I brought it up because there's an outcome with the hurricane. The hurricane never really did that much damage to the east coast of the United States. It stayed clear of the coast. It brushed along the coast, and it was heavy rains, and there was some damage in South Carolina. But for the most part, there was never any quote-unquote emotional payoff to coverage of the storm. The emotional payoff never happened, and so all of these media outlets now look like fools for telling everyone it was going to be the end of the world and invoking all of these, you know, reactions like state emergencies being called and everything else. I bring this up because it's very important that people see what it is that they do. And we don't usually get an opportunity to see what the media does as good as this one, because this one had an outcome completely opposite of what they quote unquote predicted. First they told us it was going to be a terrible hurricane season, then they got their first big hurricane. There were other hurricanes. This is D, so we had at least ABC, we had at least three hurricanes before this one that didn't really do any damage anywhere. But they finally got one that looked like it was going to be a huge problem. It actually did reach a Cat 5, and you got to see all of their tools trotted out to scare the hell out of everyone and make them believe a dream scenario that did not happen. And they will say, well, it's a good thing we warn people, because if we can save one life, that's what it's worth. This is what they do with turning political coverage into sports and turning situations into, you know, the end of the world, when in fact it's something that just happens, you know, all the time, and it happens every year. And I can't say that enough, that there's nothing unusual about hurricanes. There's no data yet from this year that indicates that any of these hurricanes are any worse than any other hurricane, whether it's going back to Hurricane Camille back in the 60s that hit South Florida. So sooner or later, a hurricane's going to hit South Florida. So when you run out and say there's going to be a recession, well, you're not wrong. There will eventually be a recession. There will eventually be a hurricane that hits South Florida, just not this one. And so they fire on it because they can't run the risk that they'll be the network that didn't warn everyone of the impending doom that was coming, whether it's a recession or anything else. And in order to draw attention away from themselves, they had to attack the president for doing the same damn thing they did, which is predicting where the hurricane's going to go and being wrong about it. And this is what goes on all the time. Why is this? Well, it's very simple. The television networks and the big news outlets, almost all of them don't really have newsrooms anymore. They have a few people who basically rewrite stories from AP or from some central news agency that might have some reporters and work up things. It's easier for television networks because all they need is some video, and they can roll the video and talk over the video all day long and, you know, dribble out information at a breakneck speed over and over again, so that every time you tune in, you think you're seeing something that is just breaking. And so it's the sense of urgency. You know, our Dave Stevens is on the ground in Columbia, South Carolina. Well, it wouldn't be Columbia, but Charleston, South Carolina. And as you can see, the storm is coming. Let's go with Dave, who's on the beach. And of course, Dave has found a spot that's very windy, and there's lots of rain, and he's in his jacket, and he is going to tell people about this impending doom. When it's politics, it's Dave standing in front of the White House. Or when it is, something economic, it's Dave standing in front of Wall Street or some other visual icon that allows them to talk about whatever's happening as though they know everything and they know what is going to happen and they can scare you to death. And this is why I did the podcast about disconnecting and breathing. Disconnecting and, you know, listening to the wind in the trees, because They don't know any more than you know what is going to happen. They are not privy to the Federal Reserve database. You know, they are not privy to what is going on in the halls of the White House. And they can't find out because they don't have any reporters or people in there. They don't have any reporters that anybody in politics wants to talk to. So they have people that stand around and watch Twitter. This is what they do. And this is a reaching hysterical proportions, because the news agencies do not have the resources to be able to report on things in a way that there's a schedule of facts that can be known about a particular issue. So what are the possibilities of a recession? We don't know, because all anyone does is speculate. They don't explain what a recession is. They don't explain what could cause a recession. They aren't able to create a schedule of facts about something that people think may happen. So what you end up with is 24 hours a day of opinion, and it extends to virtually everything. And that is why I call it the creating of a dream world. We are living in a dream world in this country, and there's nothing that can be done about it. Because the only way to get people to watch something or listen to something is to give it some kind of name or say it's breaking news coverage of Hurricane Dorian's destructive path towards Miami, or breaking news coverage, so-and-so predicts a recession within a year. Now, you don't know. The guy that's predicting the recession is what they call a permabear. He predicts recessions all the time. And so you don't know that because you have no context, because they'll never say, hey, our guest this hour is Noriel Roubini, who, what do they say? They say he predicted the crash in 2008. He's also predicted crashes. Every time there's a crash, he's predicted it, because that's all he does is predict, recessions. Gerald Salent is another one. I love Gerald Salent. I've interviewed him on the radio, and he's great when you first encounter him, because it sounds to like he knows everything about what's going to happen. What you don't realize until later is Gerald Salent has continued to predict the end of the world when it comes to finance year after year. Year after year. It's kind of like the preacher that's telling you that Jesus is coming. And I always say to these people, I would like a time and a date. And they get really upset, or they give you the tut, 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 no man can ever know. Then why predict it? You know, when you say things like, Jesus is coming soon, because here are the signs, right? Then you should be able to give me a date and a time so I can prepare for it. If not, shut the hell up. You know, if you can't tell me when, Gerald Salent, this is going to happen, then why are you doing what you do? Because this is what he does. And this is what his viewers want. And this is why people interview him, because he is willing to predict a recession or worse, a depression or anything else. Is it possible? Absolutely. You know, are we on the teetering edge of a recession? Maybe. Maybe not. I couldn't tell you, because I would have to amass so much data to be able to make that prediction. Trump's going to win by a landslide. Maybe, maybe not. You know, Trump's going to lose. It's going to be a shellacking and the Republicans are finished. Maybe, maybe not. You don't know, and I don't know. You can certainly make your predictions. We can all go around making predictions, but this is all the media does, and this contributes to this dream world that Americans are living in, where we think we know what is going to happen. And I will close this podcast with this thought. God help us if anything serious ever happens, because these media outlets do not have the resources to determine what actually is happening. So they will be on the air making up fantasies about something. If someone ever actually attacks us, if there is ever actually something crazy like an axis shift or something that happens like a 10.0 earthquake on the New Madrid Fault in the St. Louis area, which levels Chicago and St. Louis and New Orleans, it will be impossible for them to determine what is going on, because they don't have anybody on the ground. And then this idea that we are living in this world where somehow we're so deeply connected that we know what's happening will fall just like the scales from our eyes. We are being hoodwinked day after day after day by these people who have nothing to do but literally make up the news. I'm not saying it's fake news. I'm saying they're making it up. They don't really know that they kind of think they do, but they don't. And they take a tiny little fact and turn it into a half an hour of coverage with experts and everything else. Everyone knows this. And yet they continue to watch and listen to these commentators who are constantly predicting the future. I know because I used to do it all the time. And then I realized, and why did I do it all the time? Because that's what they encourage you to do. One of the things you hear all the time when you're working for News Talk Radio or for broadcast television is something to the effect of, we've got to create a sense of urgency in order to keep people watching. They're not going to watch or listen if they don't feel like that their life depends on finding out this one kernel of information, which I could just tell you. Right? I could just tell you, but it's better off if I say, and next hour, we're going to tell you about a problem that's developing that could mean the end of Western civilization. We'll be right back. They do it all the time, and they've been doing it, except now they do it at a level that is, I think, it's a reverse public service. It's a public menace. And so, you know, finally, how do we get information? You know, how is it possible for us to get information? Well, and I've said this 100 times, there's really only one way to get information, and that is you have to read everything and sort of glean from different articles what you think may or may not be going on. So if something happens in Syria, you got to ask yourself the question, you know, what do I know geopolitically about Syria and Iraq and Iran and, you know, all that part of the country, that part of the world, you know, if something happens in New Orleans, you know, you got to ask yourself, what do I know about the political structures of New Orleans and the people of New Orleans and what this means and everything else. You have to take it upon yourself to do that, and that requires a hell of a lot of reading, which no one wants to do. They just want to be told. So we are living in a dream world in America. Now, I don't know what that means. All I can tell you is, because we are living in a dream world, which is not based on fact, but conjecture almost always and prediction, you would almost be better off having, I'd like to have a news show where the commentators just read tarot cards and just had tarot card readers and then psychics who would come on and interpret what the tarot cards said. And that would be the newscast, because that's what they're doing. If you spend any time watching tarot card readers or psychics, they do exactly the same thing. Well, you know, Saturn is in the northern sky, and you know what that means? That means that things are going to be revealed. And when these things are revealed, you know, this is a time when things are going to be revealed and people are going to be reaching out for their freedom and they're willing to fight for it. And, wow, that's kind of true because look at Hong Kong. And that's what they're doing. And I don't know what to do about it. I know what I think. I know what I do as an antidote to it. But I think it does contribute, especially when they're wrong consistently and when they make predictions about things that don't come true consistently. For example, Hillary Clinton was going to win the 2016 election. Now, the polls never said that. How many times do I have to say that? The polls never said Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. And they also never said that Donald Trump was going to win the election. You had to look at individual polls in individual states to see that it was a close race that was hers to lose. But that didn't stop the media from saying Hurricane Dorian is going to hit Miami, as in Hurricane Hillary is going to hit on November, whatever it was. And they're doing the same thing again. They do it all the time. So this is why I say we have to wait and see what the contests are. They're turning the Democrat nomination for president into a sporting event. Here's, Elizabeth Warren, a two-time senator and political gadfly. Here's Joe Biden, former vice president, and blah, 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 as though they are sports people when they are running to be the president of the United States. That's what they're doing, and they're turning it into a sports contest because that's the paradigm that most people are dealing with. And then they wonder when they elect somebody why they don't do what they said they're going to do, because it's a sham. And as I said, it's something to think about. The best thing I can tell you is it's something to think about. So that's the Walk and Talk for tonight, podcast 860. Listen, I really appreciate you guys listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes and subscribing to iTunes, as well as subscribing to the podcast RSS feed right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, or checking out the audio stream, the listen live button right there at the top of the page at the Bob Davis Podcasts. My podcasts are also available on Stitcher.com, iTunes, as I said, TuneIn, which works with Alexa, Google Play, and Spotify. So you just search the Bob Davis Podcasts at one word, the Bob Davis Podcasts, at all those places, and you can easily find the Bob Davis Podcast, right? Seems fairly simple, but sometimes people struggle with it, whether you're using your phone or it's a desktop or an iPad or whatever. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and the cesspool that is Twitter. And I also appreciate donations for mobile podcast command so I can go to the story at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 860. Gets your week started out. The wind in the trees. Bye-bye. It's time to watch Succession.